Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
It's time for the VolQuest podcast, where we dissect the biggest news items of the week.
Good Tuesday, everyone. Welcome to the VolQuest.com podcast, presented by our good friends at Exterior Home Solutions. We continue to thank them for their great support of VolQuest.com and all that they do for us. Give them a call today for a free estimate if you're in need of a new roof, deck, window, siding, whatever, fencing, whatever you need. Exterior Home Solutions can take care of you. Give them a call today at 865-524-5888. Also, if you're watching us on YouTube today, don't forget to take advantage of the special promo that we have going through our YouTube subscriber for our YouTube subscribers. You can jump in and get a special rate for VolQuest. You can get 2 months for a buck at through YouTube. So be sure and check out the special promo we have with that. All you got to do is pop in the promo code and we'll take care of you as a part of our YouTube family to become a part of our VolQuest family. So be sure and check that out. You can see that on the screen right there. That code is UT1. So be sure and check us out at VolQuest through our good friends here at YouTube. We thank you all for watching on YouTube and certainly hope that you'll become a part of the General's Quarters. With Grant Ramey and Rob Lewis, I am Brent Hubbs on this Tuesday morning. And guys, let's talk about roster assembly a little bit and let's talk about the challenges and where kind of Rick Barnes is. And we'll kind of go big picture into this because it affects all sports, I think. But Tennessee's not bringing in the Hamming kid on an official visit. I asked, I think, both of you guys this question last week. Is it possible that this is not a full roster for Rick Barnes and not necessarily because he chooses it to be, but because of where you are in trying to build your assemble a roster, right? Like if Chaz Lanier comes here, Grant, you know exactly what his role, he knows what his role is going to be, right? I mean, that's an easy sell. Outside of that, what is the sell for Tennessee to somebody else in the transfer portal?
Well, I mean, it does kind of all hinge on Chaz Lanier. Like, Tennessee's been all in on Chaz. They're going to stay all in on Chaz until they get some kind of answer or some kind of timeline or whatever. You got to land him at this point because you have three open spots sitting here on May, whatever it is, 6th, 7th. That's 23% of your scholarship roster is empty. And you need Chaz to step in and to be that guy that kind of takes that Dalton Connect role and scores it for you. The question is the other two spots and – I don't know if you're going to find those kind of guys in the portal. I kind of thought maybe they leave one spot open and another spot was going to be like a Ben Hammond, who was a four-star or who is a four-star point guard in the 2024 class, but he's more of a developmental guy. You know, stash him on the roster and he's an option for you at point guard moving forward. And for whatever reason, that doesn't happen. That visit doesn't end up happening. So I don't think you can go into a season – I don't think you should with two open scholarship spots. Like, it makes sense to me to leave one open for the summer, Rob, like we've seen them do that before. But obviously everything's going to hinge on Chaz. And then you got to figure out if you do get Chaz, what you want to do with one of those two spots. I would assume you want to fill at least one of those.
Yeah, I would. I mean, you definitely want to fill them. It goes without saying, you know, all the chips from the middle of the table for Chaz Lanier. But I almost wonder, Grant, if this isn't kind of a sign of the times, if it's not going to be harder to, you know, bring a kid in who, you know, knows he's got no shot at playing as a freshman, just, you know, and not, you know, just because it's so easy to move as a player. I mean, do you want to, I mean, I think, I'm not saying every kid, you know, will be this way, but I think a lot of kids will, you know, will want to go somewhere and play as a freshman, knowing that they can trade up or improve their situation. But yeah, I just, you know, again, I don't think it's going to be all the way across the board, but I do think it's, you know, we're going to be sitting here in April, May, you know, sometime, you know, it's going to be normal to have, you know, two or three open scholarship spots, you know, not six or seven, but, you know, to have a couple that we where guys just want to wait. But to your point, I mean, if I'm Tennessee, based off, you know, my experience with adding Tobey and adding Zakai in you know, late July or August, I think hanging on to one is, you know, it makes a lot of sense. And I mean, if you think about it, those two guys, I'd like to know, or maybe we get Eric Kane to look this up while he's on the beach ever this week. Like, how many programs really have added two kids like that late who have, you know, helped you win games as freshmen? I mean, not just come in and been a factor, but really helped you win games as an NCAA tournament team. I mean, I'm sure Tennessee's not alone in that. There's a ton of teams in college basketball, but I bet that's pretty uncommon, though, to just pick kids up at that time of the year, the summer, stick them on your roster, and immediately, I mean, Zakai played, what, probably 15, 20 minutes a game on a really good NCAA tournament team.
I mean, Zakai had established himself by November when Tennessee went to Connecticut and played in that tournament and played North Carolina, and he scored like 17 off the bench. I mean, that was how quickly he had – and that's how quickly he made an impact. And I've heard Rick say this before, and I think this is a line you try to walk where you want to fill spots, but you don't want to just give somebody a scholarship to give somebody a scholarship. You don't want to bring somebody in unless you think they're going to help you down the line, because if that person does tie up a scholarship and that person is here for multiple seasons, then it's kind of wasted space if you don't think that guy's going to help you. So it's a fine line between you want to fill spots and you want to have the right amount of personnel. Like these two spots, they're in my eyes, they're going to be developmental guys anyway. If you get Chaz and then you have two open spots. So they're not going to impact next season's team very much besides what you have on scout team and practice and all that stuff. Maybe something, you know, the last guy off the bench. So it's something where you have to juggle it. And I think it's made more difficult in the transfer portal era when it is easier for guys to move, where you want to fill spots, but you don't want to just fill the spot to fill the spot and not be happy with what you look like. I think you definitely got to think about leaving spots open and maybe give yourself a chance to, if you do find something you like later on in the cycle.
Well, and how hard is it to fill a spot out of the transfer portal? And I think football looks at this from the running back standpoint as well. I think this is a transfer portal question. This is not a Rick Barnes basketball program question. But if you're a coach, how hard is it to go out and convince a guy in the portal to come be a part of your program when you can't offer – that guy looks at the depth chart and goes, you know what? Yeah, you go there. If I transfer in there, maybe I get 8 minutes a game, 6 minutes a game. Maybe I get, you know – 8 carries a game, but then if I get passed up by somebody that, you know, that they think is a younger player who's going to be better, you know what I'm saying? Like, to me, it's easy to go all in on Chaz Lanier, right? I mean, Chaz Lanier knows it's pretty easy to sell him on what his role would be on the team. But if you're not offering, if you don't have that kind of role, regardless of sport, how hard is it to go out and recruit somebody out of the transfer portal and land that guy?
Well, I think it's a huge deal. I mean, just enormous. I mean, it was, you know, to some extent, I mean, we saw it last year with Tennessee trying, you know, in quarterback recruiting. You had, you know, two scholarship guys on the roster, and I bet that won't be the last time that it happens to Tennessee or somebody else, you know, at this level. I mean, it's a fascinating aspect of, you know, of coaching that you just didn't even exist 2 or 3 years ago. You know, you didn't even have to worry about it. And Hubbard, I think your point is a good one. I don't think a lot of fans, you know, necessarily think about it. It's not just adding the best guy you can. It's adding the best guy that's, you know, either you're not going to upset the apple cart necessarily. I mean, he's got to be clearly better and have a clearly defined role, you know, in most cases, or, you know, you risk, you know, creating locker room problems. And I, you know, on the basketball side, I think Tennessee is probably in a better spot than most, because I just think they're so upfront, the staff, with their players about, you know, what their roles are, what their minutes are, what this, you know, we're bringing this guy in, and this, if we get him, this is what his role would be. And you know, player X, that's, you'll be competing with him. And, you know, so I'm not saying that's basketball staff is perfect about it, but I think I would be willing to bet they avoid a lot of the pratfalls that some other staffs fall into because they don't, you know, play games with kids about, you know, what their roles are going to be, or what their minutes are going to be, or what the competition's going to be like.
I mean, when Hubs was asking that question, my mind went to Nico in the quarterback position, and you need depth there, you want depth there, but it's, you know, it's easier said than done to to get quality depth at that position. And it's the same thing, I think, at Tennessee with Zakai Ziegler. I mean, when Minnesota, Elijah Hawkins went in the portal, Tennessee was on the list of like 16, 17 teams that maybe had reached out to him. And he had crazy good numbers last year. A really good player. He ends up at Texas Tech. But, I mean, he's too good not to contact. But also, how much of a realistic shot do you have for him to come here and split minutes at best with Zakai or play a two or change positions or whatever? Like, that's the difficulty when you have a guy like Zakai at point guard starting, a guy like Nico at quarterback that you know is going to be the guy. How do you get the guys in here to be that depth piece? It's a, like Rob talked about, a new challenge, a new wrinkle, a new, I don't know, way you have to adapt and change and figure out how to make it work in this kind of new era.
Well, and I think the other challenge too is,
yeah, because Hunter, I would say,
go ahead, Rob.
Well, I was just going to say that, what's your opinion? But I think unless there's an extreme tie, like with an assistant coach or, you know, your hometown school didn't recruit you out of high school and now you're coming back, I think even before NIL, I think the first thing these kids look at in either sport is the depth chart, is the roster. Now, NIL is going to be a factor, you know what I mean? But it's, you know, the very first, and to Grant's point about the kid from Minnesota, first thing he does is look at Tennessee's roster. Oh, all SEC point guard. Nope. Move it on.
Well, but because you're realistically going to get an NIL deal wherever you go, right? Like, it's not like the only really good NIL opportunity you have is at a school that has depth in front of you. So at yep. some point, the NIL stuff, I don't want to say cancels out, but it becomes pretty equal across the board, right? I mean, nobody's going to be drastically financially higher in an NIL deal than everybody else in your school. There'll be two or three schools within the zip code, same ballpark of where you're at NIL deal, and then it comes back to your relationship and your depth chart as a transfer. But those transfers don't want to go set. You know, I think the other interesting balance with this is, do you, and it's not upsetting the apple cart from a financial standpoint, but upsetting the apple cart from a youth standpoint and his development. I mean, if you've got a young player coming in, and he's coming on your campus, signed, locked in, and then all of a sudden you bring in somebody at his position out of the portal, how much does that mess with that guy's future in your program? So now you're balancing that part of it too. And we've talked about Freddie DeLeon. Rob, you've mentioned this multiple times. If Freddie DeLeon had known that everybody was coming back, that came back when he arrived at Tennessee in January, Freddie DeLeon wouldn't have signed with Tennessee. Not because he didn't like Tennessee, not because NIL wasn't good. It would not have made sense for him to come back, for him to come here with everything that was coming back. So how do you balance these coaches? How do you balance the immediate help, stunt development of young player to the point that you might send young player packing? That's another level of this that I think is a pretty fascinating element to how you deal with roster management in all sports, obviously basketball this time of year with all the chaos that's been going on.
Well, yeah, I think it's not just roster.
No, go ahead, Rob.
I'll be real quick, Grant. I want your opinion too, because I don't think it's just roster management. Well, I mean, this maybe falls under the umbrella of roster management, but it's also how you recruit. I mean, because Rick and his staff built this program on Admiral Schofields, Grant Williams, Kyle Alexander's, you know, kid. I don't think you can do that anymore. I mean, I think the developmental aspect, and I hate it for this staff because I think they're great at it. I'm not saying it's going away. It'll never go away. I think it's been minimized to a really big degree.
I think you can build it on those guys if you also mix in the impact transfers and not say an adult and connect every time you go to the portal, but somebody that's going to come in and produce and be a big time contributor and part of your starting five, your rotation, whatever. And I think there's multiple categories to it, because I do think Bishop Boswell is something that factors into this whole Ben Hammond situation.
Yeah,
because
I agree.
Tennessee was late on Bishop Boswell. They made up a ton of ground in that recruitment to get him and sign him in November. He's a top 100 prospect, four-star North Carolina kid. And then Ben Hammond is also a point guard, and you're bringing him kind of late in on the process and kind of getting involved. Here we are in May, and maybe that makes you think what's going on there. or I guess it makes you think from Bishop's point of view, like what's going on here? What why are they looking at this guy? Plays the same position. They already got me in November or something like that. So I think you have to balance that. I mean, you look at a guy like Cade Tyson. Tennessee was all in on Cade Tyson for a while. I also think once Tennessee knew they were going to get Igor Milicic, that if you bring in Cade Tyson, then you're stunting somebody else's growth that's already on the roster. Somebody like a Cam Carr, who has a lot of upside, who the staff loves, who they think is going to play big minutes for them in the future and be a big piece of the program. So I think you have to look at it both from the prep prospect point of view, from the current roster point of view. And then I think there's different categories for these guys that are in the portal, like an Elijah Hawkins that has multiple years. He wants to go somewhere, and like Rob said, he's going to look at the depth chart. He wants to be the man somewhere. I think there's other guys that maybe have 1 year left to play who haven't won a ton, who want to go somewhere, and maybe their roles diminish a little bit, but they're part of a winning program that gives them a chance in the NCAA tournament to go rounds in advance and kind of be part of one of those runs. So these guys, these college coaches, man, they're earning their paychecks with all the different, you know, irons on the fire and trying to adjust into whatever this kind of new chaos is.
It's total chaos, and it's fascinating to see all the different levels of it, because it's not just as simple and as black and white as it would be. And I think Rick Barnes has done, for an older coach, a veteran coach, I think he's adapted as well as anybody in that level age group has adapted. There's some other guys who just left the game, right? They just walked away and said, I've had enough. And Rick Barnes has not done that with the portal. He's embraced the portal. The question is, what's the next step of embracing? Do you have to, you know, Rick Barnes is about, hey, you got to earn it. You got to earn our trust. You got to earn it to get on the court. Do you have to play younger players earlier now if you're the basketball coach? Do you have to, I don't say guarantee them minutes, do you have to be willing to put guys in there at an earlier stage, particularly if they come out with this rule that says you could transfer at midterm? How much do you have to adapt to that kind of stuff? And look, Rick Barnes is not going to compromise the core values of what he is, but where's the challenge with that? I mean, you got a lot of time, Rob, invested in Tobey Awaka, right? And Tobey left because he just didn't think the minutes were going to be there, right? I mean, that's a big part of why Tobey left, is it not?
Yeah, I mean, that's the biggest part. So, yeah, I mean, and for this staff, I mean, the developmental aspect's not going to go away. It's not. It's never going to go away. But I just, you know, I don't know how many more guys at this level you'll see, like Kyle Alexander, who came in and, you know, just was a shadow, a flicker of what he became, you know, 4 years later, and stayed and worked. And, you know, so I just, again, I think the key thing you said there, Hubble, about this program in particular is that he won't compromise. I mean, he would leave, you know, if it got to the point where, you know, the only way you can get player X is, you know, guarantee him 25 minutes a game, you know, something of that nature. And, you know, that I don't see it getting to that point here, but it's, you know, I don't have anything to add but to pile on. I mean, to his credit, I never thought he'd get to this point where he, you know, not only is, you know, kind of okay with it, I swear, man, I think he kind of likes it. I mean, I think he really likes, you know, kind of the front office aspect of being able to plug holes and, you know, create your team really augment your team in a significant way in a very short period of time. You know, and I think he's great. At the recruiting aspect, he is great on an official visit. You know, he's great on a home visit. I think at this point in his career, what he's not great about is, you know, maybe going and sitting in a high school gym on, you know, Wednesday afternoon at 2:00 and then having to fly back and, you know, then coach his own team at practice. I'm not saying he's not good at it. I'm saying that he'd rather be, you know, Knoxville watching film. But, you know, when it's just the kid, the parents, the mom, the high school coach, the kid, I mean, he's as good as it gets. And I think that, you know, that's part of, you know, that maximizes, you know, his talents, the way, you know, the transfer portal, the way it's so hyper compressed into 2 or 3 weeks of activity.
I think he's put in his time to be able to not feel like sitting in a gym on a Wednesday afternoon.
Yeah, let me make that clear for sure.
He's sat in a lot of gyms in 37 yeah. years or however long it's been his coaching career. I do think he's adapted in terms of, he's said this and he said it publicly, like if you're bringing in a guy and he's not going to help you in the first 2 years, you might as well not bring him in because he's not going to sit around and wait 2 years. And I think they've acknowledged that a little bit more. And I think they've adapted in the portal. Like, are we going to bring this guy in? Does this guy feel a glaring need, or does this guy, is this guy kind of redundant? And does he stunt the growth of somebody on the roster right now? I think that's adapting, but I do agree with Rob. I do think he enjoys the kind of the portal recruiting is kind of like just parachuting in, dropping in and doing it so quickly and compressed. And it's not a multi-year relationships, earn it, show up, you know, put in the time, all that kind of thing. It is a very compressed 2 week, 3 week, whatever, 1 month, try to get you on campus, try to close the deal and see if you can get in this program and help and build this roster out that way. So,
all right, my last two things here, but before we move on to update on some other things and a couple other topics here. What's the number in basketball? What do you think the number is in terms of how many guys you would like to be hunting for in the portal? I don't know that you want five every year. What is that number? What do you think is the optimal number if you're a basketball coach, if you were a basketball coach? And secondly, is portal evaluations easier than high school evals or harder than high school evals when you talk about the factor of culture and all those types of things, when you only have 2 weeks to figure out who they are as opposed to multiple years to have them on campus to see if they fit in?
I think it's easier. I mean, for this staff, I think it's easier for one reason, the character stuff, the behind the scenes stuff. I mean, college basketball coaching is a small community once you get in it. And so I'm not saying Tennessee is unique in this way, but I'd say that the connections that this staff has because of Rick Barnes, because of Greg Polinsky, you know, the time that they have in this game. My point being, I think you can find out a lot about a kid in a hurry. Either you know somebody from his school or you know multiple people in his conference that have, you know, coached against him, prepared against him, heard everything about him for the last, you know, 2 or 3 years. And I think the level, the intelligence network that's available to not just Tennessee, but to all coaches for that kind of stuff, I think it's hard to overestimate just how much information they can gather and from people that they have known a long time and from people they have relationships with.
And I think it's nice to just have something on tape where you can see these guys against other high major competitions.
See, I think that part's a lot easier, don't you, Grant?
Right.
Personally.
And it's going to be limited, especially if it's a Northern Colorado Dalton Connect. He's going to have limited games against Power 5, but at least you have some kind of film. I think that would be easier. Now, at the same time, Rick has excelled, like Rob talked about earlier, with finding a Zakai Ziegler. And finding a Tobias Waka and finding a Grant Williams, who was, I think, Ivy League bound back in the day before he committed to Tennessee. So I think you have more kind of on tape hard evidence. And like Rob's talking about with talking to other coaches and figuring out who these guys are. But I think the staff has also excelled at finding some guys and finding out how good those guys really can be and how overlooked they were and doing a good job identifying those guys and evaluating them on the recruiting trail.
Is three your number? Would three be the max number you would ideally want to have?
I mean, I think it's obviously going to be change from year to year, but I would not want to bring in more than three, or you know, it would have to be some unusual circumstances. We might be different, but I bet Grant's the same way. I mean, I appreciate culture as being important and as being a factor in winning way more than I ever did before this old guy got here. But for that reason, I mean, I don't think you want to be bringing in so much new blood every year. I mean, I think having some continuity to what your standards are, to what the expectations are, is important.
I think you're probably losing a couple seniors every year. You're probably bringing in a couple prep guys that you've signed on the recruiting trail, so that's kind of a wash. So I think 2 to 3 would be kind of ideal, because once it gets to be more than that, you're losing a lot through the portal. There's a lot of turnover. That's not going to be great on a year-in and year-out basis. I think 2 or 3 is a good number.
Well, and I think the question is, if you get beyond 2 or 3, are you really upgrading, or are you just filling spots? Right. I mean, you can look at 2 or 3 and you can upgrade or you can create a push. But when you get past that and you're going to that deep in the portal, are you getting the quality of player to better what you lost, either via senior, via transfer, or whatever? That's kind of that's where I think you want to be. In addition to the culture aspect in your locker room, you want to be careful that it's not that kind of turnover, because I don't know that you can get the quality. You know, it's more about quantity than quality when you get to that level of volume of transfers. So fascinating stuff with the basketball front. I think it carries over into other sports, as we mentioned as well, just the balancing act of everything that's going on for coaches in the transfer portal. Football obviously is focused in the wintertime, basketball right now, and the chaos that has been. We'll continue to follow that. Does Tennessee bring in anybody else? We'll do everything we can to update you on Chaz Lanier and what that looks like now that he didn't get to go to he's not invited to the NBA Combine. Does that speed the process up, do you think, either one of you guys, in terms of Chaz taking visits, making a decision?
I mean, I would think so, but that is just speculation on my part. And I'd say there'll be a lot of speculation from all of us over the next, you know, 2 or 3 weeks.
What was surprising to me, and what made me think this might be a little bit different month of May than maybe he was expecting, he didn't even get a G League camp invite, which is, I think, 44 players outside of the 78 that are invited to the NBA draft combine. So that could maybe change an outlook. That at least for me, that was kind of surprising.
Yeah, it might move you into a mode of truly going into the recruiting aspect of it and kind of eliminating the thought of, you know, potentially staying, you know, into the draft if you're not necessarily a factor with either one of those. Dalton Connect gets the invite. Guys, it feels like he's got a chance to be in the top 10, pretty solidified. Not that he's there yet, but that's very realistic that he's a top 10 player in this draft. Do you think? Is that what it feels like to you guys?
I think he's got a real shot at it. I mean, the combine's going to have an impact. And I've read up on the draft and studied up on it, but I'm there's so many international guys that are in the mix that
you don't know about.
Well, I mean, all I know about is I see their names and all, you know, and all the mock drafts, and you know, they're all over the place. But there's, you know, how that sorts itself out is going to impact Dalton. But man, he would be a top 10 pick for me. I mean, but it would. I mean, you can say this about a lot of guys, but man, he would really benefit if he would slip. I mean, you know, that doesn't sound right, but he's a guy that could help a good team now. I mean, if he could go to a good situation and be a rotational scorer for a good team right now. So, you know, if he does end up slipping, and I think there's a chance of that just because of his age and just how people will pick that apart, you know, rightly or wrongly, I don't necessarily agree with that. But man, if he does slip a little bit, I think he could be an instant impact guy for a playoff team.
There's actually tangible proof that he's viewed as a top 10 because of that list they put out that I previously was unaware of because I've never had to worry about it. But NBA teams put out a list of the top 10 players in the draft based on, you know, rankings and, you know, scouting and evaluations, consensus, whatever. And there's three tiers of it. And there's extra the reason this is put out is there's extra information for these players, these 10 players, background, medical, all that stuff. And like the first tier players, it goes to the first 10 teams in the draft. The second tier players goes to the first 15, I think. And the third tier goes to number 1 through 25. And Dalton Connect was in that third tier as one of the top 10 prospects in this draft, kind of as viewed by NBA teams. So, I mean, it looks like he's going to be a lottery pick for sure, which means a top 14 pick. Tennessee hasn't had one of those in a long, long time.
But I'll tell you what, I bet to me he would – I don't pretend to know everybody else's game as much as, you know, we know him just from seeing him up close. He would, to me, be one of the safest picks
in
this draft to me. Like, I don't think you're really speculating. I think you're going to get a solid, rock-solid guy that can score at the NBA level.
Like, he's older. He's older. He's matured. He's going to crush the interview portions of it and the work ethic and all that stuff. The workouts and all that stuff. People are going to see, I think, what Tennessee saw in him over the last last year, and he's going to be a really good draft pick for somebody.
Well, big month for him, obviously. Big month for Tennessee basketball as they try to close out their roster for the 24-25 season coming up. When we come back on the other side, a little update on some football recruiting, a little update on the chaos that is the world of college athletics, including college football, when it comes to rev sharing and all the debates and discussion that's out there with that. That's coming up next as you listen to the VolQuest.com podcast presented by our good friends at Exterior Home Solutions.
Severe weather can strike at any time in East Tennessee.
and Mother Nature can do severe damage to the first and most important line of defense that you and your family have against Mother Nature, and that is your roof. Whenever she strikes, make sure that you call the people that I call. Make sure you trust the people that I trust, and that's my friends at Exterior Home Solutions, because they're more than friends, they're truly family.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Thanks again to our good friends at Exterior Home Solutions for their support of the VolQuest.com podcast. If you have roofing needs or other exterior home needs, be sure and give them a call for a free estimate at 865-524-5888. That is Exterior Home Solutions. They will take great care of you. They took care of me for sure. And grateful for them and grateful for their support of VolQuest.com. Tennessee, on the recruiting front, football-wise, all the focus is on 865 Live coming up at the end of the month of May. But Tennessee did have an official visitor in town this past weekend, an interior offensive lineman whose name I'm going to mess up, but we're going to try it anyway. It's Anthony Ogamoro, is the guy who was in town this past weekend. I think he had a terrific visit. He's a guard. I think things went really well for him and his family. Family's important to him. And I think that visit went particularly well for Tennessee. So we'll see what happens with that moving forward. But that was the only official visitor to date for Tennessee. It's crazy we're talking about official visits in May. You see his everything about him there. He is from Eglin, Oklahoma. The Sooners are in there. Kansas State's in there. But I think Tennessee did a terrific job with that visit and put themselves in a really good spot with him. Not saying they're going to get him, but I think the visit catapulted Tennessee up near the top of his list with Oklahoma and Kansas State. So we'll see what happens with that. But he was in town this past weekend, and we'll see if he comes back in town for an unofficial visit or kind of where he is with his timeline moving forward as Tennessee not only working the tackles, but also working the interior offensive lineman as well. This is a guard on the inside. And of course, we've talked about the tackles for forever, and it starts with David Sanders. Will he be here for 865 Live? We'll see. How much is Ohio State emerging in that recruitment? Is that Tennessee's toughest battle for him? All those things we'll be talking about at VolQuest, and we'll continue to update you on all things going on in the world of college football recruiting as June is the new January. And so we'll see what June looks like with all these official visits and obviously kicking it off with the Memorial Day event, 865 Live. Tennessee baseball team's ranked number one in the country by one of the 87 polls that is in college baseball. Tony Vitello could absolutely care less where his baseball team is ranked right now, but the Vols are putting themselves in a position to have a chance to win the regular season SEC title as things continue to go well for all the spring sports at the University of Tennessee. Life's good for Danny White right now, right? I mean, you're in the top 10 and basically everything going on this spring. You're building stuff like crazy. I think $400 million, nearly $500 million worth of projects you got going on. You're talking about an entertainment district that you got going. You're completely redoing your baseball stadium with the next phase that's happening. For Danny White, life is going pretty well right now. But there's obviously concerns out there. Danny White expressing some of those and some of his frustrations, I think, is probably a better way to put it, with where things set kind of in the world of college athletics. Guys, we're seeing a lot about rev share. We're hearing a lot about the rev share deal and what that might or might not look like as they try to resolve, you know, this case before it goes to court in January. What's realistic? I mean, what I mean, we're throwing out all kinds of stuff, right? I mean, $18-20 million in rev share, potentially allowing scholarships to go whole. We talked about it in basketball, guys being able maybe to transfer at midterm, proposals out there that basically unlimited staff in football if you want to. You're going to be able to designate different people to go on the road if you want to, where an assistant coach, if he's not a good recruiter, doesn't have to go on the road, but you can put somebody else on the road. How stressful, if you're an AD right now, is life? Even though you're winning a bunch of stuff, how stressful are you if you're an AD right now?
I mean, I guess it depends on, a lot of different factors, but man, there is just a lot of moving parts. I mean, a bunch of stuff you rattled off there, Hubbard, is stuff that we wouldn't even thought possible, 20 years ago. I don't know about possible is maybe not the right word, but just, not something anybody was thinking about, was talking about. I mean, just, things that didn't even exist. I mean, maybe I said 20 years ago, but I mean, heck, 10 years ago, 8 years ago,
5 years ago.
Yeah, for some of that. I mean, the landscape is just, shifting at light speed. I mean, for a lot of different factors. I mean, NIL, certainly one of them. The lawsuit, you mentioned another, conference realignment. I mean, TV contracts. There's a lot going on. And I don't mean this to denigrate anybody at all. I'm just saying, you called athletic directors, de facto CEOs for a long time. I mean, that's not even a tongue-in-cheek thing anymore. And it hasn't been for a while. I mean, you got to have a – I guess what I'm saying is, the days the old football coach retired and changing offices are way, way over it. And again, that is not to denigrate anyone at all. I'm just saying it's just a different job now. It's just it requires a different skill set.
I think what you need to know about Danny is y'all asked him at the Big Orange Caravan in Nashville about the SEC football schedule and being 8 games or going to 9 games. And he basically said, I hadn't even thought about it because we got too much other stuff to think about. And 10 years ago, if there was a change to the SEC football schedule on the table or possibility or whatever, that's all we would talk about day in and day out until there was some kind of resolution, especially in May, entering the summer. I mean, that would be the first thing that you'd be asking the AD. That'd be the first thing the AD would be talking about. They would want to go one direction or the other. And the fact that Danny says, I haven't even really thought about that because we got more pressing issues, because you're talking about revenue sharing, you're talking about unlimited transfers. I mean, Hubs, the stuff you're talking about with, a basketball player potentially playing for one team before Christmas and another team after Christmas. I mean, that's the world is upside down, and anything can be described as realistic at that point because of just kind of the craziness that we're kind of wading through right now.
Yeah, I mean, and again, Danny White's stress level is not as high as some other ADs because Tennessee's where Tennessee's at right now. I mean, financially, they're very sound. They've got a passionate fan base. They were ahead of the curve in NIL in so many ways. And I think now that you're allowed to have that relationship, I think Tennessee's relationship with Spire has morphed and has grown into more of a marriage. So you've got somebody who's competent on the collective side, doing business the right way. There's nothing that's kind of fly by night with that deal. All of that, I think, goes in the direction to take some of your stress off. But man, when you start talking about $20 million and then you got to pay part of the settlement, schools are going to pay part of the settlement. So the NCAA is going to hold a couple of million dollars a year in their revenue distribution to you. The possibility that you could turn and your rev share make, baseball scholarships all whole. I mean, everybody on baseball could be on a full scholarship. How does the Title IX factor into that? I mean, there's so many different levels of that. That's crazy. That makes me continue to think, is the end game for all of this the reality of that you have to have a collective bargaining agreement and that the student athlete has to be employees? Are we putting a Band-Aid on it if we're trying to do some kind of rev share model where we incorporate still NIL and all these fronts and kind of, Danny talked at the SEC or at the Big Arts Caravan about let's stop the patchwork, let's stop the spackle, and let's stop trying to plug a hole here and that there and go fix things. Is the fix a collective bargaining agreement? Is that Is that realistic? Is that where this thing's going, in your all's opinion?
I mean, I don't pretend to know the answer, but however, I mean, I agree with Danny. I mean, it's got to be something big like that. The phrasing I agree with is the patchwork. I mean, I think that's what's got to stop. Where you're just like, you know, sticking your fingers and, you know, and plugging, you know, a different hole in the dike. It's got to be something big. And whether that is a CBA, you know, I don't know. I mean, does it include all sports? Does it just include football? Does it just include football, basketball? I mean, I don't pretend to know the answers, but I totally agree with your point with what Danny's saying. It's got to be something big. You can't just, you know, keep fixing the next little thing. You know, eventually you got to fix the roof, the whole roof, you know, instead of like setting out a million little buckets to, you know, to catch the leaks, the drips.
I think what you're moving toward is the National Football League. And I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. I think people hear that and they think it's going to become the NFL and it's going to lose what college football is. I think you can keep what college football is because players are already getting paid. It's already, you know, like we were talking about earlier, the changes between 5 years ago and now are drastic, insane. And it wouldn't be, it'd be unbelievable to go back to 2019 and try to describe what 2024 was going to look like. But you got to go to, you kind of got to follow that model of, if you don't want unlimited transfers, you better have contracts and multi-year contracts. And these guys better be employees. And if they're going to be employed, they better have a union and they better have a union rep. They better have a Gene Upshaw and a collective bargaining agreement. And, you know, revenue sharing's, you know, it's great to talk about, but it's going to be, you know, how hard is it going to be to iron out all those details and figure out what you want that to look like? I mean, when I look at college football specifically, I mean, you look at the power conferences, it's almost like you might as well just go ahead and split from the power conferences and the non-power conferences. I don't know what the label is for those moving forward, but and kind of turn it into a more geographical, region-based, almost like conferences, like the National Football League, because you're moving toward a 12-whatever team playoff, however many it's going to be in the future. You better start modeling yourself after the NFL and trying to keep whatever college football is part of that and kind of follow that model, because right now, and it's going to be pure kind of chaos until that, you know, all that stuff down the road gets figured out and they figure out what that alignment wants to look like.
Well, I think it's interesting because college football can break away, right? The NCAA is going to do everything they can to keep the basketball side of things under their umbrella because of the finances that is involved there to pay for other sports championships. So they're going to fight like crazy to hold on to basketball. But how much do they fight to hold on to football? And Robert, you're right. I mean, is this going to be would you see a day where football players are employees, but other athletes and other sports are not employees? Or does it have to be all blanket? And I think the first step that maybe we see some separation, as small as this may be, is I read an article over the weekend. Nobody in the Big Ten thinks that the secondary, the non-revenue driving sports outside of basketball and football are going to be long-term necessarily conference members, right? Like they don't think USC and UCLA is going to travel to play baseball and softball in the Big Ten. They'll do it for a year, but they think most people are going to come back and go, this is crazy, because we can play the Banana Slugs, right? And we can play the Matadors, and we can play UC Irvines and all the schools in California that are, quite frankly, better baseball schools than the Big Ten schools are. And it's a lot cheaper for us to do that. And the Big Ten's going to say, it's okay if that's what you want to do. So if we get to that point, and Rob, you've talked about this a bunch on the podcast, it makes no sense, right? If we get to that point, is that a first step in some real separation? You're not all into one conference, and you're not all the sports are not equal, so to speak.
I mean, to me, it would be. I mean, it's just common sense. And again, it's beating a dead horse for me a little bit because I have talked about it, but just, you know, sending the Maryland softball team out to, you know, UCLA for a series is not the same as, you know, the football team going out there, you know, like they're used to, you know, all, you know, which is normal. So that part makes no sense. I mean, I'm really encouraged for it to, you know, read and hear some things like that. And it just makes too much sense. I mean, the coaches, the players, the families of the players, you know, that's are hugely impacted. And, you know, I don't know how much people are even thinking about that. I mean, how much, you know, how much of these kids' decisions, you know, in these secondary sports about where to go to school involved so their families can see him play, you know, get the car and drive to see him play as a, you know, and that's, you know, that's been thrown out the window. So I really hope it moves in that direction. It just seems like it would make so much sense to, for it to move in that direction.
And I think there's already basis for separation based on the postseasons, because the NCAA has nothing to do with the football postseason. They don't have, you know, it's not, you don't see the NCAA logo on the field for bowl games, for playoff games. It's not the NCAA tournament. I don't know why the NCAA would want football to begin with, because of the headache that it presents. And I don't I don't know what kind of money it makes them. I mean, what Hub said is right. Like, they need to be all in on basketball because it's the NCAA tournament. It's March Madness. That's your copyright. You got an NCAA logo on every single floor, every single tournament game. You're handing out the trophy, the NCAA tournament championship trophy. It's got NCAA written across it. Like, the football already does its own postseason. That's the basis for separation. That's the only basis for separation that you need, because that's the only thing that matters. Like, that's the thing you're really holding on to. Like, that tournament, basketball tournament, makes the NCAA money. The football postseason does nothing for the NCAA. If you can survive this long with a separate postseason for football, I think football can break away and do its own thing.
Well, and you have to have the NCAA basketball tournament in order to have wrestling championships and track and field championships and the College World Series and the Softball World Series. Because if that's gone, then those championships, as we know them, are in jeopardy of what they might become. Here's a thought somebody put into me, an NFL guy put into my head over the weekend, and we're going to close on this. What would life be like if you go to a collective bargaining agreement? Let's just use football, for example. If you went to a collective bargaining agreement in football and you're signing guys to contracts and you're making them employees, what would a coach's life be like? How much easier would a coach's life be if within that collective bargaining agreement, you deal with what the NFL's done and you tier the contracts? So kids out of high school, this is your cap. This is what you're paying in your NIL deal in year one. Okay. And then we will revisit it after year one to see if there's a renegotiation type deal, right? If you performed and are worthy of more of it, then you can do that, or you can become a free agent. But how much better would a coach's life be if in recruiting it wasn't unlimited, that everybody had some equality in terms of the cap deal? Because I look at a guy like James Pierce. To me, James Pierce is what you think NIL is supposed to be, right? Probably got a little bit coming in to get him. And then he hits it big, and he's gotten more because of what he's done on the field, which is – what the NFL said after the Sam Bradford disaster, right? Where he got $100 million, got hurt, it didn't matter at that point. Then they go to rookie tiers. They go to the contracts at the tier level. How much easier would a college coach life be if you're in a collective bargaining agreement and you're recruiting, you were capped in terms of what you could do for somebody to get them to come to your school?
Yeah, I think you'd probably have about 100%, you know, sign-on rate.
Everybody's all in on that one, right?
Because I'm crawling over broken glass to get that, because what we've learned in the NIL era is these kids are going to ask for crazy stuff. Like, they're going to ask for a huge number. Now, they might not get it, but they're going to ask for it. And at some point, they're going to kind of expect an insane number. I mean, some of the college basketball numbers for the last month have been insanity. So for a coach, it's out of your hands then. It's out of your control. Like, I want you at my school. I can only give you X amount of money based on the rules. Makes my life so much easier. And I think it makes your life easier in the locker room, because the guys who just got here aren't the guys that are the most highly paid guys in the building. And the way it is now, I mean, one kid makes a shot in the NCAA tournament, his agent, his rep's going to be coming for more money from that school moving forward, or we're going to go test the portal and the free agency market. I think coaches would love that.
Well, I'll tell you another thing that would eliminate Hubbard. We talked about this a lot. It would eliminate the all too common ploy of, you know, some kid's representative telling, you know, one school, you know, this is the number we've got from, you know, school B. You know, if you can't get to that number, then that's where we're going. That would take that, you know, that trick off the table. Or I don't know, maybe you'd still have, like, school one saying I'm a tier one guy, school two saying and I'm a tier two guys, but still, I think it would simplify things immensely.
Well, and I think it's more for the high school kid coming in.
Because, oh yeah, 100%.
Because you're paying, you know, some places are paying so much on a potential deal, you know, big money on what somebody might be versus what they. I mean, you haven't proven it yet. Whereas the NFL with the rookie contract deal, you got to kind of prove it, right? I mean, now I understand first round guys make more money than third round guys. So I'm not saying it's the exact same thing. But there is a prove it level now in the NFL, where right now in college sports, there's not a prove it level before you get to. I mean, the whole thing about the NFL is get to the second contract, right? The NBA's got rookie deals, right? I mean, you got to get to the second contract. That's where you get to the max and you get to those things. I just wonder if that's a point where a collective bargaining agreement could get you somewhere there to balance the chaos out. And the roller coaster of it out, right? Because all it takes is one school overpaying whatever their worth is, right? I mean, if a kid asks for something and one school's willing to pay it, then there you go. Whereas if you're in some kind of structured system, maybe it makes things more manageable. I don't know. I don't think, I mean, we're a million, billion miles from being there, but 4.5 years ago, I didn't think we were a billion miles. I thought we were 10 billion miles from being where we are right now. But it's wild. There's a ton of things going on. Even though it's the offseason, we have basketball stuff. There's all this rev share talk. What does that look like? What does that become? What does it not become? As they try to get to some sort of, I mean, there are meetings early next week in the SEC. And Grant, you're right. Danny's right. They're not going to, these ADs in the meetings aren't going to talk schedule. I mean, it's like at the bottom of the agenda, right? It's Z and whatever's past Z, because A to you get to Z is so much more important than whether you're playing 8 games or 9 games, which was the biggest, hottest topic, you know, 3 years ago when the SEC announced that Texas and Oklahoma were coming in. And it's a non-factor topic now in college football. But ADs will be at the SEC office. They're actually there this week doing some meetings. We'll see if anything – some whispers come out of that before they go to Destin, Florida at the end of the month. Lots and lots of stuff going on. We're going to talk about it all at VolQuest. We're going to talk about it here on the podcast as we do each and every week. We'll have the Mailbag podcast coming up on Thursday. Plenty of football stuff going on right now. Baseball going on. Obviously chasing Chaz Lanier and everything else that is in the world of college football or college basketball right now. Hope you've enjoyed this conversation. A little bit different today on a couple of topics. Hope you guys have enjoyed just some of the debates and discussion about the chaos and how coaches have to manage the chaos and some thoughts on all of that. That is going to do it for this edition of the VolQuest.com podcast presented by our good friends at Exterior Home Solutions. He is Grant Ramey and Rob Lewis. Thank you for your time, guys. We appreciate it. Thank you for subscribing. Thank you for listening. Thank you for liking, and thank you for being a part of VolQuest.com. That's going to do it for this edition. Have a great day, everybody.
You've been listening to the VolQuest podcast every week here on VolQuest.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.